This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I am joined back in Whakatane by Mawera Karatai. Kia ora, Mawera.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. You are quite recently back from your big trip.
Yep, back from a big trip. When we left, it was 32 degrees. When we got to Auckland, it was 5 degrees. And that was a bit of a shock to the system. But I really, really loved it over there. I had some incredible experiences, really powerful. Want to go back again. And I think the thing I'm most excited about is that I get to be down in Dunedin in 2 weeks and I get to be in the same space as you, Sam. Very happy about that.
That will be fun indeed. And who are we introducing today?
It is my absolute great pleasure. Like if I was like 12 years old, I would call him my hero. I suppose I can still have a hero when like he's in his 20s and I'm in my 50s. So kind of like a weird little hero worship thingy going on. Henry Eden Mann, fourth year engineering student at Canterbury University and thoroughly, thoroughly decent human being. Welcome, Henry. It is lovely to have you with us today.
Hello.
Welcome, Henry. I think I've met you before.
I don't think so. Hi, Dad.
So, Henry has also just come back from a trip. Tell us the highlight of the trip. Will, tell us where you were.
So, it was a two-week trip to the US around Spaceport America. So, it was a rocketry competition. Was the main focus of the trip in New Mexico. And then we road tripped through Las Vegas and over to California for a week.
That sounds fun. So let's just step through how you got there. So you are in your final year of engineering?
Yeah. So I'm at University of Canterbury in Christchurch studying mechatronics engineering.
Mechatronics. You have to tell people what mechatronics is.
Yep, true. So mechatronics is a bit of a weird one. It's a mix of mechanical, electrical, and computer science, really. So it's quite a new discipline. It's a really exciting mixture.
Is it otherwise known as robots?
Yeah, it's otherwise known as robots.
Why don't they just call it robots?
Big complex names make people feel good.
And robots kind of suggests like humanoid things walking around, and that's not what it's about necessarily.
But it's a lot bigger than that. It could be your cell phone, it could be your fridge, it could be a rocket, it could be anything. That's a really cool discipline, I reckon.
Can you think back to when you saw that as a thing you wanted to do?
I think I probably discovered the term at the end of maybe midway through high school. It really just emerged from robotics throughout high school. Had some pretty fortunate experiences to get me to where I am now.
And what appeals about it?
About mechatronics?
Yeah.
Just having that kind of bigger picture, not being so focused on just the mechanical or just the electrical or the computer science side, kind of seeing how these systems interact, and kind of being able to take a step back and make really exciting big projects happen from a systems perspective. really fun.
And over the years, we'll get to rockets in a bit, but over the years, you've been building lots of things before university, but also at university. You've been making stuff happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. I absolutely love just making things. I can't stop. just understanding how the world works, just seeing how things, taking them apart, putting them back together wrong, trying again, doing it wrong again, trying again. You eventually figure it out. That's a really exciting place to be, trying to figure out how the world ticks.
And you have to know a bit of, as you say, mechanical, electrical, and computer science. Is it kind of an equal measure?
Yeah, I'd say so. Probably a bit more on the mechanical and electrical side. But yeah, it's pretty balanced.
But you're writing code and building circuit boards and things.
Yeah, totally. Yes.
And when you went off there, the thing that was in your head was swarming drones. Swarming drones have been replaced, perhaps, by rockets.
For now. Might come back to the one day.
So what have you been doing with rockets?
A lot. Been a busy wee time with rockets. So I started – involvement with rockets really started probably 3 years ago with my level one rocket, which is just a small kit set rocket, went to 1,000 metres. A team of four. It's all involved through a club at University of Canterbury called UC Aerospace. So that's been a foundational club for getting me to where I am. And then it grew quite rapidly through circuit board design and all my courses, learning about electrical design and computer science and how to write good robust code for rockets, because they go quite fast and it's quite a challenging field. And then more recently it's been my involvement in Spaceport America. That was that trip I alluded to before.
I'm going to ask you about Spaceport America after we've had a song. Let's have The Zombies. This will be our year.
Is gone. This will be our year. Took a long time to come, and I won't forget the way you helped me up when I was down. And I won't forget the way you said, "Darling, I love you." You gave me faith to go on. Now we're there, and we've only just begun. This will be our year. Took a long time to come. Smile for me, little one. And this will be our year. Took a long time to come. You don't have to worry, all your worry days are gone. And this will be our year. Took a long time to come. And I won't forget the way you helped me up when I was down. And I won't forget the way you said, "Darling, I love you." You gave me faith to go on. Now we're there, and we've only just begun. This will be our year. Took a long time to come. And this will be our year. Took a long time to come.
So this will be our year. This has certainly been your year. Tell us about the Spaceport America competition and then the previous experience that the UC Aero space has had at that.
Yeah. So Spaceport America is an international university competition of about 180 teams, which is about 2,000 students, which all come together in the New Mexico desert in the middle of June, which is very, very hot, about 45 degrees, to launch rockets. Quite crazy people. It was a really amazing experience. So there was really two categories, aiming for different altitudes. So there's a smaller rockets and bigger rockets. So the smaller rockets are going to about 10 kilometers. No, sorry, smaller rockets are going to 10,000 feet, and the larger rockets are going to 30,000 feet. So the larger ones are going to about 10 kilometers. So they're quite involved, quite big rockets on the model rocket scale.
And this is a whole competition. There's lots and lots of judging categories. You've got to write a report. You've got to design the things. Mm. You've got to build the whole thing. You had to build a circuit board.
Yeah, so my role was the control systems and avionics lead for that rocket. So the goal of our category was to get as close as possible to 30,000 feet. So we didn't want to go higher. We didn't want to go lower. As close as possible. So my role was to make a system to achieve that. So we needed a way of changing how high the rocket's going to go during its flight. So I created some air brakes, which could change the drag of the rocket and change how high it went. So that was to try and get us as close as possible to that 30,000 feet target. But it was much more involved than just launching a rocket. There was, as you say, lots of report writing and design and review and all the good engineering stuff you would normally see along the way.
And you have to have a parachute and recover the rocket, two parachutes, the rocket.
Yeah. So you lose a huge number of points if you don't successfully recover the rocket. So you're scored on lots of aspects along the way.
And these rockets that were going up to 10 and 30,000 feet, they also had to have a payload.
Yeah, they did. Yep. So we had a scientific payload. They all had to have a scientific payload of doing different roles. What was ours? It was protein crystallography experiment from one of the professors at university. Big words, not particularly my area. But yes, they all had a payload.
And you skipped over it, but there were 158 or something teams?
Yeah. So it was really big competition as far as they go. Really and exciting to be surrounded by that many rocket nerds.
Yeah. Who knew there were that many?
Yeah. Me, when I'm standing in the middle of a huge crowd of them, but not really, hadn't dawned on me before that.
Because your team was quite small. You travelled with 10, 12,
yeah,
something?
With 10, yeah. We had a team of 15.
And that would have been one of the smaller teams. There were gigantic teams.
Oh, totally. Some of the teams were huge. Some of the ones from Australia were like 150-something people. They didn't all go to the competition, but back home they were all massive teams.
Cool. So your the rocket launches very fast.
Hmm. Yeah, very fast. Pulling 25 Gs. Off the launch pad, so 25 times the amount of gravity, Earth's gravity. It reached a top speed of almost 3,000 kilometers per hour, and it reached 10 kilometers in about 30 seconds. That's really quick.
That's a
30 kg rocket.
Yeah, it's big. It's like it's big. You're tall. It's 3 meters. You're tall. It's taller than you.
Yes, 3 meters tall.
And how long does the motor go for?
The motor that we're flying is dubbed the rocket killer, because it normally it has a tendency to just shoot straight through the rocket, ripping everything in its wake. So the motor burns for 3.5 seconds, and that gets you all the way to 10 kilometers.
So once that trajectory is set, if you didn't put your air brakes out, it would go to higher than 30,000.
Yeah, that was the That was the plan. But then the air brakes just cut off that last little bit of altitude and get you just to the perfect 30,000 feet.
So do you wait until the motor cuts out and then figure out what the trajectory will be?
Yeah. So after the motor cuts out, immediately after the motor cuts out, we will start controlling for that, controlling the angle of the air brakes to get you to 30,000 feet.
So that's maths. Like you quite quickly work out what trajectory it's on.
Yeah, lots of maths. So using we have barometers, which can tell you the current pressure. And from that pressure, you can get the altitude. So you can figure out where you are and how fast you're going. And then you can figure out where you're going to end up from that. So yes, a lot of maths. A lot of maths, very fast.
And last year, the closest anyone got was like 100 feet.
Yeah, something like that.
Within that. So what did you get?
Well, that's a difficult question, depending on how you want to answer it. So we had two sensors, and they both read about 100 feet above or below, above that 30,000 feet target. If you take the average of the two sensors, we were 25 feet off, which is about seven meters, which is like two rocket lengths. So a pretty incredibly close.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you can't tell that, you can't see it. There's not like a line it's going to in the sky with a.
That would be nice, but unless you can see 10 kilometers away and with a resolution of 7 meters, then no. Very far away.
So you know that when you get it, catch it, when you get it back down to Earth and you plug your computer in and you look at it.
Yeah, or you listen to the beeps and then everyone gets very happy very quickly.
And the overall, this is a big, the judging. So your category is that 30,000 category.
Yes. Yeah.
So how well did the University of Canterbury do?
We won the 30,000 foot category.
Woohoo!
Quite remarkable. Yeah. Pretty exciting.
Because last year you were like 59th or something.
Yeah, I think we were 35th in that. 35th overall and like 15th or something in the category.
Yeah. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, hugely exciting. That's a really amazing, really amazing feeling.
So after
a whole lot of effort to get to that, and it's all comes together.
So did you get back together as a team in the last couple of days with the new semester?
Yep, today.
And were you walking on air?
We were all pretty happy, yeah. Not as happy as immediately after the competition. That was a pretty exhilarating feeling. When we all got the rocket back and heard the beeps, and it was like, oh my goodness, we're 25 feet off. How did that happen? Yeah, I'll remember that feeling.
And like, is there, so what, this is your final year dissertation or whatever it's called, project, the full year project.
Yeah.
So given that most people do it in the second semester, does that mean you have the second semester off?
Oh, that would be nice. I'll see what I can do. I think there'll still be some work to do, but the bulk of the project is done, which is quite nice.
So do you have to write a report on that in addition to the one that you did for the competition?
Yeah, so there's still more reports to go, and suggestions for next year and making prototypes, and it can be as big of a project as I want it to be. But hopefully this project will continue for years to come, and it can just get closer and closer, and they can go into different areas and different categories.
Have you been invited to the Vice-Chancellor's office yet for a celebratory cup of tea?
That'd be nice. Might have to send them an email.
Bubble Sprite of the Forest of Orokinui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi araha nui kia koutou ko tahua hou. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last more than 3 years have been very tough. So it's so important that we acknowledge this and give ourselves the time and the space and the care, the compassion, the love, the support that we all need to recover and recalibrate. I know for myself, of course, the living world is such a source of comfort. In my heart's home workplace, Orokonui Eco Sanctuary, I'm so grateful to be able to frolic there in a space dedicated to love. And of course, we have our sanctuaries within. So there's always that place within us that is safe and dedicated to love and is there just for us to explore and come home to. So really interesting times that we're living in. And of course, so much has changed. Important that we find these points of connection and points of commonality as we move through our daily lives. And of course, as a species, we just have so many incredible innate capacities to nurture, to learn, to communicate, to create, and also to observe a situation and gather information. And I think this is important. At times like this, where there is some uncertainty and there are still unknown factors around us, as we settle back into a new rhythm and new ways of doing, being, seeing, feeling, it's so important to take the time to take a step back and observe the patterns of behaviour that we see around us. Observe those shifts and changes within ourselves and allow those new configurations to form without too much conscious interference, and just see what unfolds as we move through. I know for myself that it's been a wonderful journey returning to my work with beautiful people of all ages, inspiring that connection with the living world. And we've had a wonderful time thinking all about our waterways and how we can be kaitiaki, guardians of our waterways, with the beautiful Wakari School this week. And we had a wonderful interactive EnviroScape, which was a model of a city. And you know, we started right back in the beginning. We covered the EnviroScape with lots of trees, pretend trees and pieces of felt and lots of native animals and all this sort of thing. And then we made it rain, and the rain moved down through the EnviroScape to a big pool at the bottom, and we could see the water was very clear. And we kept doing this. We went through all the different permutations, the different time scales. Here we are. You know, people have just arrived in Aotearoa. What are the things that are changing? Some erosion taking place. And of course, modern day, all the things. And it was wonderful to allow the children to share their ideas about the changes that they could see happening and the changes that they could see we needed to make now. And this is something I think that we really can excel at, is allowing others to share their thoughts, their ideas, their perceptions, and learn from them. So I really hope for you, even when things may feel unknown and things may be in development, I hope that it's possible to give yourself that capability and that opportunity to take a step back, watch, observe, listen, learn, and find out where you are now in this new time, this new place together. I know for myself, being part of this show is just such a wonderful, wonderful thing, and I'm so grateful. So a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. And I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Henry Edenman.
Henry, what got you into this in the first place?
Into rockets? Or...
Yeah, or just into this engineering, this way of thinking, this... Where did it all start for you?
I was very fortunate with the opportunities that arose during high school. Ran into some very talented and kind people who are willing to give up their time to teach me these sorts of concepts. But it probably starts a lot earlier than that. I mean, having Dad in this field probably really helps. Having parents who are really into STEM education. Lots of just amazing opportunities.
We've got some big problems that need to be solved in the world, and your generation is going to inherit all of those because we have failed miserably to sort them out. In fact, worse than that, we've added to them. So apologies for that. Sorry. So how do we get more young people involved in STEM so that they're kind of enabled with the skills that they're going to need for solving some of those bigger problems that we've left you with?
I think something needs to change, because as you say, there are so many problems, and it's very easy to be overwhelmed and hide from them because they're terrifying and there's so many. But somehow changing the approach to those problems to be seen as like an opportunity, I think would really help, which is a really difficult task. Probably better STEM education in high schools would certainly help. That was really neglected during my high school. I was just lucky that I had the opportunities outside of school to develop those. I think once you're in the university context, you're probably on the right track. It's more getting kids to that stage. That's the challenge.
Did you know that this was kind of the area that you were going to go into? Like, you must have, because obviously you enrolled in an engineering degree, but at what stage in your life did you know that this was your direction? And how did you know?
That's a pretty challenging question. It was pretty early on. Actually, at my year 13 leavers dinner, my head of house pulled out a reflection card, like what we predicted we would be when we joined high school, and I pretty much had it exactly spot on. It was something like robotics engineer at university or something. It was like I don't know how I particularly got to that path, but I was pretty set on it all throughout high school.
Do you think your peers who are with you on this journey, do you think that they kind of knew as well?
Some of them did, but probably the vast majority didn't. Many have probably found their path throughout university. They've come to university and jumped around a few disciplines until they eventually find it. But many just pick a discipline and try it and then move on to the next one.
I've got this this kind of theory that I've been working on for a while, which is that it doesn't matter what you end up doing. What matters is that you've got the skills to be able to imagine yourself doing a thing. So if we ask our kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? Obviously, if you ask a four-year-old what they're going to be when they grow up, generally they don't actually know. But if we can start teaching people how to think themselves into a future, then we're giving them the skills they need to create a future for themselves. And it sounds knew that already.
Yeah.
You had that.
Yeah, well, I knew that I wanted to be able to solve big problems because I could see all the big problems, I guess, from quite a young age. And probably having parents that think like that helps. But being able to see those problems and thinking, how can I make a positive impact? And then thinking what jobs could get me there, the way that I approached it.
You probably won't remember this, but I remember in 2017 sitting in the cafe at Otago Polytech talking to your dad, and you and your mates came in after school, and I sat and listened to you guys talking, and I was blown away. by the kōrero, the insight, the positivity, actually, how positive you were. And I think, you know, like I can get a bit cynical, and but there wasn't that cynicism with you. You had this incredibly positive approach. And I thought, gosh, if these are the, you know, if this is our future, we're going to be okay.
That's blasted,
And now look at you. You're like, you've just kept on going and developed even more skills and surrounded yourself with a bigger team. And I just think that's amazing. And I'm just super proud that I know you and that I'm going to get to, you know, see what the next few years are like.
Thanks. That's really nice. That's cool to hear.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. How do you reckon we can get kids to stop being afraid of the future? Because climate anxiety is such a big issue. Like this is space that we can, lots of climate anxiety in my life at the moment with young people. How do we shift our young people from that mindset of everything's going so bad and we're going to lose everything, that, you know, the waves are knocking at the door ready to take my house? How do we shift from that position to one of wanting to solve problems and seeking out the skills to solve the problems?
It probably starts with solving smaller problems and showing them that you can solve small problems. Like the waves knocking at your door, that's a huge problem. The kid's not going to be able to solve that.
No.
And they shouldn't be expected to. That's a qualified team of hundreds of thousands of people to solve that sort of problem. But if you can teach them like basic STEM skills, like 3D printing and laser cutting, and get them thinking, how do I solve small problems? Oh, the I don't know, the hinge on my dishwasher is broken. Do I buy a new dishwasher? Probably not. That's a bit dumb. Like, you know, just solving small problems and developing skills and developing that skill set and going to university and developing it further can lead to solving much bigger problems. Eventually solving, how do I fix the waves knocking at your door? Do I build a big wall? Do I move house? I don't know. You know.
That's I think you're exactly right. And I think that is, it's getting people into that mindset, because when your dad and I, you know, when we were children, it was really normal that you just fixed everything. You didn't chuck anything away. You fixed it. And then we kind of have moved away from that let's just fix it mindset into a let's throw it out and put it in the landfill and make it someone else's problem and buy a new one, and which isn't made in our country anymore, and like all of the implications of all of that. And we need to move back to that fix it mentality.
Some things are just so easy to fix, and you just end up buying a whole new product. It's just disgusting, really.
It is.
That is a personal pet peeve, maybe because I have the skills to fix it. So I do, and that's how I end up collecting so many broken things. But that's something definitely needs to change in that area.
I tend to be surrounded at the moment by a lot of broken people, and I think that if we enable people with the skills to fix things, then maybe we're enabling them with the skills to fix themselves as well. There's just so much, you know, there's this discard mentality that we have towards not just things but people as well.
Totally. There's to be much more respect for the planet and the people overall.
At Whakatane High School, where Jack goes to school, we've got mechatronics, we've got a robotics club, we've got an ePro 8 club, where we just interviewed the inventor of ePro 8, which I'd love for you to hear about, actually, because it was so amazing.
I might have listened to that one.
There's a real, you know, we're a really isolated, small, rural community. And there's a lot of amazing stuff going, but we've also got some of the worst problems. You know, we had the Prime Minister not long ago saying that some of our roads, we just can't keep rebuilding them because they keep falling off into the ocean, or you know, going down a river. And there are some big problems here, and I see that movement, but I also see that we're really fortunate, and that it's not happening everywhere. And I think it's with young people like you who are doing amazing things that are, you know, we can hold up as being an example of why this matters so much. You've become a poster boy, Henry.
That's slightly terrifying, but cool.
I think it's wonderful, and if you ever find yourself in Whakatane, you've got a whole collection of young people who have just followed this adventure that you've just had, and who are so amazed by what you've achieved, you and your crew.
So exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. What advice would you give to those guys?
Well, it sounds like they're in a pretty fortunate position in their STEM schooling. I reckon they're probably on the right track. Probably just keep pursuing that, keep pursuing STEM. Understand that, just learn more and more skills, build up your engineering toolbox, as I like to call it, and see how those skills can lead to making a positive impact. That's just kind of my driving mentality. Gather more and more and more skills, see where that ends up.
That's a nice place to be. And it sounds like you've surrounded yourself with people who think the same way.
Yeah, pretty fortunate position.
Is that important, do you think, to have people around you who think the same way?
Yeah, a bit of conflict keeps you on your toes, but on the whole, yes, it's nice to be surrounded by a supportive group that feels the same sort of thing. And that everyone understands the problems, like, especially in the engineering context. No one's oblivious to them. And we're all learning those skills to try and solve them. I mean, people are in it for different reasons. Some people just want to make money. There's always those people. The big problems often lead to making money. So, you know, they all come back to the same thing in the end.
I need to squeeze in the second of Henry's music choices, Three Dog Night with One. Why this one, Henry?
It's just a nice number, you know.
Is the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know. Yes, it's the saddest experience you'll ever know.
Thank you. are talking about Spaceport America Cup. Is it called Cup? Competition?
Spaceport America Cup, yep.
That you came first in your category. You also, just as excitingly, came third overall.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty huge. Out of 160 teams or something.
Yeah, and this is from engineering schools all around the world.
Yeah, huge accomplishment.
Did you get to meet interesting people from other institutions?
Yeah, great people from Australia. All other teams from all other. It was a really amazing place to be, seeing all those different perspectives and everyone complaining about exactly the same problems that I had. It was quite a cool feeling.
So you were representing New Zealand. Did you point out to all the Europeans that New Zealand's got launch capability and Europe doesn't?
Yeah, lots of them were actually very jealous. I mean, besides the fact that we have to move islands to launch a rocket, which is a bit annoying, we can all we got all launch ours. But yes, also Rocket Lab, very cool.
So what was the best bit about your trip across America?
Outside the competition or including? Tough question that I should have a good answer for. Space shuttle in California, seeing that was very, very eye-opening, much, much larger than I thought it would be. Grand Canyon, also huge.
famously big, that one.
Yeah, almost grand. Yeah, it's gaining a lot of perspective. That's my first travel overseas. It's a really exciting experience overall, meeting a huge number of people, seeing different cultures, being completely overwhelmed by just the scale of everything.
And being weirded out by Vegas?
Oh, totally. What a weird place. Totally odd. Why? Why? Kind of cool from a design perspective, but just the disparity between the richest parts and the poorest parts one block over, just odd and quite sad, really. But cool perspective, interesting perspective.
What would be your advice to next year's team?
Oh, that's the whole next 6 months of thinking there. Be prepared for a lot of work, probably. I would encourage them to go for it. It's a pretty special experience, but a very unique experience that you're only going to get there.
You're talking before about how you're hoping to use engineering to make the world a better place. And you know that I've always had a problem with computing, that it's firmly entrenched in a value set of buy more stuff, buy our flash new computer.
Yeah.
Has engineering got the same challenge?
It probably does. I mean, it's especially my part is heavily built on computing. It's all of those same issues. But I think there's also a way forward that can kind of move past some of those issues, like a better right to repair legislation and engineering in a way that isn't so wasteful and just more sustainable design. So there are paths forward, but yeah, lots of your thoughts are pretty entrenched.
My work is done. I have some questions to end the show with. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years? I think we've been talking about it, but
I think we've probably been
you might come up with something else.
Okay, I could come up with something else. Probably getting through this engineering degree. I mean, I'm almost there. One more semester to go. That's been a huge marathon. A countless number of hours has gone into that. And it's very exciting to be where I am now. being able to look back at where I came from. A little bit more work to do, but I'm really almost done.
Especially after a very disrupted first, whatever it was, year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, I've kind of blocked that out, but that was huge. It was a very strange way to start university.
So we're writing a book of these conversations. It's called Tomorrow's Heroes. It's our team of people doing good work. So you're in that team. What's your superpower?
Probably just trying to keep a positive outlook on the approach to problems. So not being overwhelmed by the number and the severity of all of the problems that surround me. And trying to see those problems as opportunities to make a positive impact.
Is it still about seeing the problems but doing it? It's not just a matter of doing it with a smile on your face. It's something more fundamental than that.
Yeah, well, it's doing it in the first place. That's like a lot of people could just hide away from those problems because they're too hard. And, yeah. Yeah, it's not just doing it with a smile on your face. It's doing it in an ethical and sustainable way as well.
I should say that you've got the advantage over most people because you've been running the transcription for all of these shows. So you know what these questions are.
I do. Should I ask you?
No, that's all right. So do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Even though I know that question's coming, it's still throws me just as much as it on ask. I think it's kind of hard not to be somewhat of an activist, the way that I've been raised, being in a go to protests while I'm still in the pram, probably. But yes, I think to some degree I'm an activist. Not necessarily going to protests screaming and shouting. That was more during high school, with like school strike for climate. But I definitely have that sustainable mindset that hopefully throughout my career I'll stick to, and strong ethics that I'll stick to try and make that positive impact.
Are you allowed to be an activist engineer, or as engineers somehow pretend that it's divorced from that?
Yeah, I think you're allowed to be an activist engineer. Probably. I'd hope all engineers are somewhat activists. They should be anyway. Although it's pretty devoid in a lot of the teaching. I've kind of lumped all of that together in one course. It was like such a strange mix of things. Ethics. Oh, ethics. Was it activism? It might have been activism. And accounting. It was a strange mix, all in one course.
Yeah, and they probably referred to it as soft skills.
Yeah, it was like everything that engineers are devoid of.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning? I do know that you're quite good at working all night, so let's imagine that you've actually gone to bed.
That's a very bold assumption. What gets me out of bed in the morning? Looming deadlines? The alarm clock? No, I can do something better than that. Probably just getting through this engineering degree, wanting to move on to bigger challenges.
So what is your biggest challenge that you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
Well, I've got to find an exciting job. I've got to find a grad role. That's going to be a big challenge, which I'm not sure what it will be yet. Hopefully something in the aerospace sector, keep this rocket journey going. But who knows? exciting time.
Indeed. And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Just keep on learning. Keep on building up that engineering toolbox for trying to make a positive difference. Don't be overwhelmed by the problems. See them as an opportunity.
That was a pretty clever compound piece of advice.
Didn't even practice that one.
Moira.
Henry, I think that we are very lucky indeed to have young people like you. And the future's in your hands. And I feel like you are an outstanding role model. You have got such a stellar attitude. And you're smart and you're kind and motivated by all the right things. And so I feel more hopeful about the future just because I know there's someone like you in it.
Well,
so I really look forward to seeing how that all unfolds. But I also just feel really, I feel real thankful that there's someone like you that will lead, you know, the generation of my son and his peers that are coming up behind you. Because the kind of role model that you are is the kind of role model that the future needs. So thank you for all of the goodness that you bring to the world, for the amazing things that you will do in the future. And thank you for your time today and for sharing so openly. Kia ora.
Thank you very much.
Righty-ho, I have got a jukebox to go out to. You get to choose what we're going out to. I've got some options. Would you like Bowie's Space Odyssey?
Ground control to Major Tom.
Number two is, I've got several, can't choose already.
Oh, sorry.
Number two is Elton John, Rocket Man. Number three is the Kinks, Supersonic Rocket Ship.
Let me take you on a little trip, my supersonic ship's at your disposal if you feel so inclined. Right. We're gonna travel faster than light, so do up your overcoat tight and we'll go anywhere you want to decide.
Number four is the Jets, Rocket to You. Number five is, this is a really old one, even older than the songs you picked. Billy Hogan and the Twilighters, Shake It Over Sputnik.
Well, a bunch of brains from across the pond came to America to help our native sons. On the stormy night, 1958, down in Rocket City, history was made. Everybody went crazy, taught the town sirens when the weather was around.
And number six is Air Surfing on a Rocket.
Good choices. Let's go Rocket Man.
Dumb.
Good choice. Flight.
0 hour, 9 a.m. You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens Team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic Te Pūkenga. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio, Wednesday afternoons at 3, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyer's Baby, with Moira Karatai in Whakatane, and we've been joined from Otutahi Christchurch by Henry Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Atiwa.
And I think it's gonna be a long, long time till touchdown brings me round again to find I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh no, no, no. I'm a rocket man, rocket man, burning out as fuse out there alone. We'll be right back.
kind of place to raise your kids. In fact, it's cold as hell, and there's no one there to raise them. If you did, I don't understand. It's just my job 5 days a week. A rocket man, a rocket man. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time to touch down.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.